Hello and welcome to the second monthly edition of the Kaspersky Daily News Podcast. I'm here with Chris Brook. He is a security reporter and one of our fellow editors at ThreatPost.com. Hey there, Chris. How you doing?
Not too bad. Good to be here.
So, one of the big themes this month, and it's sort of been a theme ever since these NSA surveillance revelations started coming out, is there's been a harsh realization that a lot of the conversations that we once believed to be private are not really all that private after all.
Yeah, let's start with Apple, who's for a long time been known to operate behind this, you know, this magical curtain of mystery. You know, whatever happens in Cupertino, you know, you're not going to find out about, you know, let's say you want to ask how iMessage, you know, the chat messaging app that iPhone users use, you want to know how that works? They're not just going to give you the source code for that. But a couple security researchers from the French security firm Quark's Lab were able to reverse engineer the iMessage protocol this month and found out that Apple actually controls the encryption key infrastructure for the entire system. Because of this, if they want to read users' messages, decrypt them, hand them over to the government, they could. I mean, there's nobody saying that they are doing this, but they have the ability, or if the law leans on them and says, hey, pass it over, they could.
Yeah, and there's there was a similar encryption-related issue that was discovered in the popular WhatsApp mobile messenger. I apologize ahead of time for butchering the name of this researcher, but Thies Alkamade, he's a computer science student and the lead developer for a multiple platform instant messaging service called Adium. He realized that the mobile messaging application, WhatsApp that is using the same keys, like cryptography keys, for both incoming and outgoing messages. This is more or less a crypto implementation error, but it's enough that Alkamade is saying that users should consider every WhatsApp message that they've ever sent compromised. In order for user messages to be exposed, though, an attacker would have to first eavesdrop on a victim device, but then he could go ahead and decrypt the contents of all of those communications. So this is one of those situations where the criticality of this threat is entirely dependent on what you're using WhatsApp for. If you're using it to chat about sports with your buddies and you don't really care about the privacy of that, then that's, you know, that's one thing. It might not be that big of a deal. But if you're, say, a Tibetan activist in China, then this is something that the government could potentially eavesdrop on, and you're going to want to take a second look at it, probably.
I think one of the more troubling and really one of the more obvious bugs, actually, from this month was the Verizon SMS reveal. The good news is that the security researcher that found it, Cody Collier, is actually one of their own customers and happened to be poking around the web app and found that just the number entered in the URL on the website, Verizon actually didn't check that phone number to see if it belonged to the user that was entering it. So you can go ahead, enter a phone number, a user that could go ahead and then download a spreadsheet detailing the entire user's SMS activity.
Yeah, that was a bad bug. And for those of you who aren't, you know, too techie, SMS is standard messaging service. And it's basically, I mean, not basically, it is text messaging for nearly every mobile device. So being able to read a user's entire SMS activity is being able to read all of their text messages, which is troubling to say the least. And also, again, and don't forget, Snapchats, I've heard them called snaps by the kids.
That's what they're called.
They do not go away forever as they are billed to. We've known this, but now there's actually an app called SnapHack, cleverly. And it basically makes it so normal everyday users can save Snapchat pics or snaps without the sender even realizing it. Whereas Snapchat had a feature built into it that was supposed to let you know, which is a small consolation, but it was supposed to let you know at least if the person you sent the picture to took a screen grab of it. So that's, you know, that's the eavesdropping part of this. We're going to move on to some of the more hard security news here. So there was a big Adobe hack, which I think would have gotten a lot more media attention if we weren't still in the throes of this whole NSA surveillance scandal. But basically, Adobe got thoroughly hacked. The attackers made off with 2.9 million sets of customer records, including customer names, encrypted credit and debit card numbers, expiration dates, and other information used in customer orders. Maybe more troubling, the attackers also stole the source code for Acrobat and the ColdFusion development platform, which could potentially enable the same attackers to develop exploits based on whatever they might have found in the source code. This is a big-time bad hack, the kind that could potentially reverberate into other attacks in the coming months. That said, though, I mean, these 0 days that come out of this, or there were a couple of Internet Explorer 0 days as well that popped up in the last month, these are things that regular internet users don't really need to worry that much about. They're scary, and they're nearly impossible to protect against, but criminals aren't wasting highly valuable 0 days to steal your banking credentials. They're exploiting vulnerabilities that we already know about, which is why it's so important to make sure that you're running some sort of antivirus or malware detection software, and maybe even more importantly, that you're just updating your software and your operating system as early and as often as possible.
Another one of the month's bigger breakthroughs came from a report from well-respected blogger Brian Krebs, who described how the credit bureau Experian acquired a company and then continued to negligently allow that company to sell scores of personal data to a Vietnamese national that was operating an underground identity theft service. That data belonged to a third company, to which that Experian subsidiary had established a data sharing relationship. However, part of that deal was that Experian was not to sell this third-party data to anyone other than the U.S. firms. It, of course, was selling it to an unlicensed foreign entity, which is not a good thing.
Yeah, and it was doing it for, you know, a year or so after it had bought this other company, which is, it's bad news.
Yeah, it's like troubling to say the least.
Yeah, I would agree with that. There was also a report from, sort of on a similar note, from FireEye, another security firm, about an ad library on Android that is both thoroughly vulnerable and incredibly aggressive in terms of its behaviors. Just a little background here. Developers sort of just install these ad libraries into their apps as a way to make pay-per-click money from the advertisers. So like, you know, in some of your apps, you'll notice that there's an ad there. These are just like hand-picked from a group of pre-made ad libraries. And the developer will get paid depending on how many users download their app and then how many users go and click on that. So neither you nor the developer can control the way these libraries behave. They didn't call out the library by name, which was probably smart, but the combinations of its vulnerabilities and its behaviors potentially enable attacks that could take control of vulnerable devices. The ad library, they're calling it Volna, which is a clever mixture of, it was vulnerable, which is a mixture of vulnerability and aggressive. The ad libraries issued some fixes, and Google booted out some of the developers and banned their apps, but users don't really, and some of these developers also updated their apps, but the problem is users don't really install updates that reliably. So while initially there were about 200 million people, well, not people necessarily, but 200 million specific downloads that were vulnerable, so there's still 166 million vulnerable downloads floating around out there, even despite what Google and Volna and the developers have done to fix that. All things considered with this, it's sort of smart to just pay for your apps. I mean, nothing is free. If you're not paying for it, then you're the product, is what people like to say. So if you pay for apps, a lot of times you won't have these ads that are surreptitiously culling data from you, or at the very least, you know, you're going to want to monitor your permissions and make sure that you're updating these things as often as possible.
This news could probably tie into the Snapchat and the social media privacy aspect, but it seems that not a month can go by without Facebook making a troubling and controversial privacy change that everybody goes ahead and posts about. So you used to be able to broadly say how you wanted your profile to be indexed on a search engine. You could go into settings, you could say, I only want my stuff to be searchable by friends or friends of friends.
This is on Facebook's search engine, right?
Yeah. By friends of friends. This month, the company made a change, so users have to make this decision on how each individual post is presented, basically, to the public. So directly, you have to decide the visibility of each post when you publish it. Otherwise, pretty much everything that you post is going to be indexed in Graph Search, whether you like it or not.
And the one of the keys to the old feature was that you could just say that your entire profile would not be indexable, would not be indexed in their search engine. But now with Graph Search, they've decided to change that. And now everybody who's on there, their profile is going to be indexed in Graph Search. So there's no way, like when I first got on Facebook, I made it so that only my friends, not even friends of friends, just my friends could see that I even had a Facebook profile. But now that's not going to be the case. If you want to go in Graph Search and search for some random person, you're going to find them if they have a Facebook account.
You may not find everything they post.
Yeah,
you can select if you want private or whatever.
And
what have you.
You know, you can make the information that, like the about information in your pictures and probably even your profile picture private, but they're still going to see that you have a profile. So, I mean, I think that's all we got. We're trying to keep these things pretty short. As always, though, keep reading the Kaspersky Daily. If you want to get a bit more technical, a bit more in-depth, then you should head over to threatpost.com, where we keep the security news coming all day, every day. Our editors, Mike, I got another one too. Our editors, Mike Mimoso and Dennis Fisher, do a podcast pretty similar to this one. It's bi-weekly, as in every 2 weeks, so you can listen to it twice as often. Special thanks today to Chris Brook for joining us, and I hope you guys will come back and listen again. Talk to you later, Chris.
Thanks.